Inside Chicago Government. ShyGov.com.
Welcome to another in a series of interviews with Ben Jarofsky. I'm Dave Gloetz. Ben writes on government and politics for the Chicago Reader, and his smiling face is right here with me, his snickering face.
You just told me something very funny off air, which is very funny.
Today we're talking about your article that appeared in the Reader on May 22nd, 2014, titled "Mayor Emanuel Provokes a Fight with Chicago School Principals." You wrote of an op-ed piece by Troy LaRavier, principal of Blaine Elementary School at Ashland and Grace, in which LaRavier described the oppressive and authoritarian way in which Chicago Public Schools, or CPS, management deals with its principals. And you wrote how other principals soon spoke out in support of and agreement with LaRavier's position.
Yes.
In your article, you mentioned Clarice Berry, president of the Chicago Principals and Administrators Association.
Mm-hmm.
With regard to the relationship between CPS management and its principals, Ms. Berry told the Chicago Tribune, quote, "This is the worst it's ever been. The micromanaging, the threats, the intimidation is unprecedented," unquote. Ben, what can you tell us about the Chicago Principals and Administrators Association?
Well, it's one of those establishment groups that I've had very few encounters with over the years because they just part of the establishment, so they don't pay any attention to me.
What do you mean part of the establishment?
It's like the unions, the entrenched unions here in the old days. They were part and parcel of the Daley machine. They had their own little place in it. I mean, they were not appointed by Mayor Daley, but they were part of the overall infrastructure of the Daley machine and the way Daley operated. Rich Daley, the previous mayor, not the old man, was that he cut deals with all these different entities, and there were leaders that he sort of liked, selected leaders of each one of these groups that he would meet with or have accords with. So in the total scheme of things, like the Principals Association was sort of their representative, principals representatives with Mayor Daley, and they got a very close relationship with Mayor Daley, and particularly under the Vallis years and the Arne Duncan years. And I, of course, I've always been an outsider complaining about this or that. So I had no relationship with them. I had no relationship with Chicago Teachers Union for years either. It was only after the dissidents took over that I actually have talked to Chicago Teacher Union leaders. In the old days, it was very difficult. And the rest of the unions are the same way. That's what I'm saying. The way Chicago is run is that it was very much one party, and all these different groups, the principals, the Chicago Teachers Union, the trades union, the business civic community, they were all part of sort of that Daley machine. They cut their separate deals. So to me, the principals were part and parcel of all that.
So they got their deal and they didn't complain. That was their role.
Yeah, they got their deal. They didn't complain. So there was many curriculum fights throughout the Daley years that they were silent on. We'll start with the mandate of high-stakes testing, which was not resisted by the principals or the teachers' union, I might add. It was implemented by Daley with Vallis and Chico, which resulted in thousands of kids, mostly black kids, getting held back because you had to achieve a certain score in a test that was supposed to be a barometer. It wasn't supposed to be a high-stakes thing. It was supposed to be a judgment of where you are in the total scheme of things so that you could get enrichment in English.
It was helpful to the teacher, so take the temperature, whether students were...
Exactly. They turned a thermometer into a billy club, and then they whack kids over the head with it.
It's analogous to what happened with charter schools, which were originally intended as laboratories to test new sorts of ways of teaching, et cetera, and then they became their own separate school system.
That is correct. You sound like me. Maybe I sound like you. So during the Daley years, matters like the curriculum that I'm talking about, you could talk about the thievery of the pensions. The Chicago Teachers Union was acquiescent in that. The principals looked the other way. Now we're paying the price for it. So this is how I view them. You ask me how I view them. I view them as part of this larger establishment that has controlled Chicago since Mayor Washington died.
So that image sort of flies in the face, or that description flies in the face of the posture being taken now by this Ms. Berry, who is the president of this Principals Association. It makes them look more like a union.
Well,
taking a stand like the Chicago Teachers Union.
That shows you how bad things have gotten under Mayor Rahm. How far he's moved from the Daley model. The Daley model itself was not something you would want to emulate. He's even made it worse.
It shook them loose from their deal stand.
Yeah. And as I articulate in the column, what Mayor Rahm has done, you know, I always point out how cynical the man is. It's exceedingly cynical. Many of his educational moves have been made in the name of giving principals more autonomy, more authority, when in fact he's taking away their authority, first with the budget cuts. So he's making principals make the hard decisions as to who gets fired, toilet paper or teachers, the sort of the choice that many principals faced. In other words, when you cut the budget, principals don't have enough money for basic supplies. If you come from a well-to-do or a relatively well-to-do Northside school or a magnet school, then you can hit your parents up for donations and you can use that for supplies. You can use that for computers. But if you come from a poor school, parents don't have that discretionary money that you can rely on. So you have to make these very difficult decisions. I've talked to principals off the record about this for the last year or so and written about it. I remember last summer when principals were facing these very tough decisions with their budget. Troy, the principal over at Blaine School in the North Side, was the first one to go public with it. And when he went public with it, Clarice Berry had no choice but to come out and articulate a very strong position, or she would look like she was not standing with her brothers and sisters.
Once he staked out the turf. You mentioned that article from last August. And you and I spoke about that article, which concerned a particular frustrated Chicago Public School principal, whom you called Jackie, a pseudonym. In that conversation, you said that you were starting to hear from more disgruntled principals like Jackie, most of whom spoke, as you just said, under the condition of anonymity, and a word I can't say, off the record. How much have you heard from principals since then?
It's basically the same principals that I've heard from.
They're the regular.
There's about five of them that call me on a regular basis or, you know, semi-regular basis. I've never been that close with principals except for one or two down through the years. My sense of it is that there is a growing frustration. But see, principals in Chicago, this is the point I also wanted to make, are a very special breed of Chicago political animal. And it's a combination where they rule like autocrats over their staff, but they're sycophants to the people above them. So it's a very odd combination, and it's how you play the game, or traditionally it's how you play the game to rise in the ranks of the Chicago public school hierarchy.
It's like a royal court sort of politics.
That is correct. It's royal court politics. And so if you do it really well, you become a district superintendent, or you may even become a superintendent, although those days are over. Now, we haven't chosen a superintendent from the ranks of Chicago since the early 90s or late 80s. Anyway, the point is, this is sort of the model that principals have followed. So they would be the last people to turn to someone like me. You know what I'm saying? So I've had many conversations with principals, sort of off the record, informal conversations, like we're standing alongside each other in a public meeting, we start chatting. But it's very rare that I have like a really honest discussion with a principal on the record, because principals have to be very cautious in this town. The game that they play is one in which they're not allowed, or they won't allow themselves to speak out. And that's why what Troy did was so unusual and exceptional, and why it stirred so much public interest.
I want to go back to this idea you just mentioned about principals' motivation around their desire to move up the ladder. You wrote that, quote, "The overwhelming majority of principals in Chicago are pretty much willing to go along with any old nonsense that comes out of the mayor's office," unquote. You said that one motivation is that kissing mayoral butt is good for their career track. That is, principals who toe the party line can go on to presumably management positions at CPS. Do you have any evidence of that actually happening on any significant scale? In other words, that their aspirations actually will be fulfilled if they, you know, toe the line?
You mean any particular principal?
Or any cases?
Well, there was that embarrassing spectacle early on in the Mayor Rahm era where he wanted to implement a longer school day. And so instead of sitting down with the teachers union and the principals association and working out a manageable plan, maybe starting with a few schools that really could use extra resources.
A gradual implementation.
He made it a system-wide ultimatum and gave no extra money to support it. When he faced resistance from the Chicago Teachers Union, Karen Lewis and the Chicago Teachers Union, he, Mayor Rahm, turned it into a classic Clinton / Obama White House political strategy, as always part of a campaign. And part of that was to proclaim this universal need for a longer school day that Chicago kids were suffering, and that he, Rahm, was going to take a tough stand on behalf of the children of Chicago against these greedy adults. So in part, he needed some schools to come along. If you recall, his ally in this was the Chicago Tribune's editorial board, our favorite newspaper. So they did a, like, you remember the honor roll of
yes.
schools that broke from the teachers union on this? In the end, I think there was like 13 of them. And it would be principals strong-arming their teachers into voting against the union. Many younger teachers whose jobs dependent on the principal because they needed that approval. And Mayor Rahm, this is the most cynical ploy at all, gave them bonuses. Like, oh, here's, I think it was 75 grand a school, something like that. Go buy yourself some computers. Well, first of all, you should be giving them money for computers in the first place. Second of all, it's a one-time bonus. What good is it the next year? And I remember watching these principals, some of them young, bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, coming before the cameras saying, I'm willing to work a longer day. I believe in children, as though anybody who disagreed with them doesn't like children.
And they got rewarded.
Yeah. Now, what I don't know, and I've never followed up on, is what happened to those principals? You know, have they seen the light? Are they part of Troy's coalition? You know what I'm saying?
Or did they get brought upstairs?
Did they get brought upstairs? Are they now working for Arne Duncan at the Department of Education? You know, to me, that was the most obvious case of mayoral suck-ups.
This media dust-up that occurred after Mr. LaRavier's op-ed, these other principals came forward to express their dissatisfaction. Let's talk about what gifts it might cause the mayor to bestow. You wrote about this phenomenon in another recent article titled Poll, a Troubled Re-election Bid, that appeared in The Reader on May 15th, 2014. Online, the title was Rahm Reels Toward Re-election Bid. In that article, you imagined Mayor Emanuel sucking up to Congressman Luis Gutierrez and building
yeah.
support among Hispanic voters
yeah, that was a funny one. Yeah,
by
yeah.
creating a selective enrollment high school on the yeah. southwest side and naming it after Gutierrez.
Yeah.
Can you imagine any gifts that Emanuel might hand out to try and quiet the principal rebellion in the months leading up to his reelection campaign?
Well, if he's going to take a page from his past playbook, he will suddenly miraculously discover money that he claimed he didn't have and use it to enrich the arts program, or, you know, like give them some money to hire an art teacher, give them some money to hire a computer teacher. That's the kind of thing he might do. It's so easy to be jaded and cynical about the operations of Chicago politicians in general, but this particular administration is really, you know.
It invites it.
It invites it because he's one of the most cynical operators I've ever seen. And that way, that's the true transparency of the Emanuel administration.
Not the transparency he intends.
No, no, or that good government groups cry for. You were alluding to the joke that I was playing on was that in an effort to placate his Northside base, one thing Mayor Rahm does kind of understand is what motivates Northside voters. That's where he lives on the Northside. He said, oh, well, Northside parents want another selective enrollment high school to send their kids to. I'll give them one. And I know I will put it on the Northside, okay, where I've already got like three or four and I've just expanded Peyton, but I'll name it for Barack Obama. And that way, no one can object because it's for Barack Obama. So, like, all the black people will be happy because I named the high school.
It's a twofer.
It's a twofer. Take care of the white people with something really insubstantive yeah. that they could send their kids to and name it for Barack Obama. And black people will be happy. You know, of course, that blew up in his face. Chicagoans were not as stupid as either Mayor Rahm or I thought they.
Damn.
Yeah, I know. I hate when that happens. So I was joking that because he's so low in the polls with Hispanics, I think his support level in the Sun-Times poll was at 2%, polling at 2% among Hispanic voters, that what he was going to do is tie himself to Congressman Luis Gutierrez and hope that Luis endorses him in a high-profile way, the way Gutierrez endorsed Chico in the last election. And then knowing Luis the way I do, I figured Luis would try to extract something from that endorsement. So going back to what the schools need, if you're looking at geographical distribution of special enrollment high schools, it's clear that the southwest side needs one now before the north side needs one. If you think that that's the best investment of public school money, I'm not sure that I would agree with that. But if you do believe that, then the southwest side should have a special enrollment high school. So look out for that. You know what I'm saying? That could be something he does. See, I think, talk about cynical moves by Mayor Rahm, I truly believe that he felt that putting Hispanic educational needs, turning it over to UNO, the charter school, was going to be his ticket. And so that was like a crucial fundamental error he made politically. He overestimated the popularity of UNO as an institution among Hispanics, and he overestimated their ability to handle the money that was being thrown at them.
Juan Rangel is very persuasive. and charismatic. So,
Why
wouldn't he be sucked in?
One thing about Emanuel's style is that he's used to sort of identify leaders of different groups, of different blocks. And you say, okay, I'm going to give you X, Y, Z, and you're going to bring your people in. That's what his problem with Karen Lewis was from the get-go. He told her, basically, this is what I'm going to do. X, Y, Z, your job is to get the troops in line and do it. And she said, no, I'm not going to do what you said.
And he said, fuck you.
Yeah. And it's all been downhill since. So Rangel said, yes, boss. So it was a huge mistake by Rom. Anyway, if you ask me what goodies he'll throw, I could see that. But the real problem is, in terms of principals, is operational money. You need operational money to run your schools. They need more money to hire their teachers. The funding program is, I don't want to go into the details, but the funding program that he set up effectively tied the hands of principals so that they're limited in who they can hire. There's an incentive to hire younger, relatively inexperienced teachers who you can pay less. So he should change that funding formula, which would give the teachers more authority and leeway. He says he wants to give them more authority and leeway to hire who they want to hire. So if they see there's an outstanding English teacher at New Trier High School who has got 15 to 20 years on his or her resume, the principal should be able to have the discretionary money to hire that person. But you can't with the system that Rom has concocted because there's not enough money.
There's a structural underfunding, which I don't think is going to be reversed anytime soon as we return now to the Vallis years.
The Vallis years, our lieutenant governor.
They're coming back.
Oh, my God, yes.
As old as you again.
You hang around long enough. Oh, geez. Yes, you're absolutely correct. So what Rom has to do to sort of win over the principals, he's not been willing to do. And that's seriously increased the amount of money we spend on public education in Chicago, as opposed to basketball arenas for DePaul or hotels for Marriott.
We'll leave it there. Ben, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you, sir.
Listeners, we welcome your questions and comments via Facebook and Twitter. Search for Inside Chicago Government. I'm Dave Glowatz. Thanks for listening.